Ready. Good morning. It is February 23rd, 2007. The North Dakota Public Service Commission is meeting on the 12th floor of the state capitol. With me, joining me at the meeting today is Commissioner Tony Clark, and by phone today, Commissioner Kevin Kramer. And in case you hear any background noise, he is in a airport participating in the meeting today, and so that would explain if you hear any public announcements going on in the background of our broadcast of this over the internet. Commissioner Clark, do you have any welcoming comments?
I just welcome. Thank you.
Both Commissioner Clark and I have returned from meetings in Washington, D.C. I know that I participated in an electricity delivery forum these last 2 days. 400 people from around the country were there to talk about building transmission all over the country, and people were very interested in what's going on in North Dakota with wind development and energy development in general in our area. I know that Commissioner Clark was head of the Telecommunications Committee down in at NARUC, and he had some very interesting panels, including one on a joint board, wasn't it, Tony?
Sure, yeah. In fact, at the end of the meeting, I'll give an update on some of the meetings I had in D.C., but we'll get to the agenda here so Commissioner Kramer can make his airplane if he needs to.
Okay, all right, that sounds good.
The only thing I would say up front, Commissioner Weefald, is I just want to make sure that the record reflects that through my participation on the phone, I do authorize Lori to apply my signature to any orders passed today that I vote on.
Thank you, and we'll make sure that Alana's sitting right here, and we've all heard that, so that should be no problem whatsoever.
Okay. With that, I would move passage of the items on the consent agenda.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And I just want to note that in the consent agenda items today that we are returning siting application fee to several energy companies who have sited either transmission lines for electricity or oil pipelines in the state. And this is as a result of a legislation that was passed a few years ago. The companies have to pay their siting fees, but then the commission uses the siting fee money as it sees as it's necessary, and then it's returning all of the money to the companies who have finished their siting activities, except for $5,000, until they complete all requirements of state law. And so that's what those items are under the consent agenda today. All right, after moving from those, I'm going to go to SW1. I move the commission adopt the order granting trade secret protection, case number PU06481.
Second.
This is in the Otter Tail Corporation Power Company Advanced Determination of Prudence application. This is a procedural step so that some of the information that is being filed by Otter Tail can be kept in trade secret status.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The next one is SW2. I move the commission adopt the order granting trade secret protection, case number PU06482.
Second.
This one involves Montana Dakota Utilities, and it is also asking for trade secret protection in the case of advanced determination of prudence application. This involves the addition of an additional power plant down at Big Stone City, South Dakota, and the commission has held a number of proceedings already in regard to this. We've held a public input meeting. We've scheduled a public hearing. This is, again, just another procedural step in this case to allow the filing of trade secret information.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. SW3, I move the commission acknowledge the letter of intent, shorten the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent and a siting application to 1 day, and assess a filing fee of $100,000 in case number PU0754, Just Wind, LLC's proposed 192-megawatt wind farm in Logan County, North Dakota.
Second.
Now, this wind farm that we have the letter of intent on, we have just a little bit more information than what's included in the motion today. It would author it w- it they are planning to build 192 megawatts of wind in Logan County, North Dakota. The proposed site is just northeast of Napoleon, North Dakota. They're planning to construct 82.4 megawatt wind turbines. Now, just to give you an idea, the turbines that are located to the north of us in Wilton are 1.5 megawatt turbines, so these would be even larger than the ones that are located near Highway 83 near Wilton in North Dakota. They are planning construction to commence in the spring or summer of 2007 this year, with completion in approximately summer of 2008. And they estimate the total cost of constructing this proposed project would be approximately $285 million. And that's why the commission is assessing a filing fee of $100,000 in this case. That amount of money is dependent on the amount of the investment that's planned for the project. It's not unusual for the commission to shorten the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent and a siting application to one day. In this case, I don't anticipate receiving the application tomorrow for this siting, but if it did come in tomorrow, that means that the commission would be able to look at it and start to proceed forward in the case.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. SW4, I move the commission award a contract to Hansen's Excavating, Inc. in the amount of $8,594 for construction work or two or more coal outcrop fires in western North Dakota.
Second.
Last fall, the commission solicited bids for, earlier this year, the commission solicited bids for construction services for extinguishing coal outcrop fires. And now we are awarding these bids. We're giving it to the lowest bid came in from Hansen's Excavating for $8,594. This contractor will be correcting the situation, addressing coal outcrop fires on private land northwest of Amadon, North Dakota, and another coal outcrop fire on Forest Service land southwest of Alexander. We're first going to see how far the money goes on the site in northwest of Amadon, because that appears to be the most serious site. And then if there are funds left over, we'll address the site or sites on Forest Service land southwest of Alexander. Everything seems to be in order.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. SW5. I move the commission adopt the order granting intervention to Mark Treshock and the Dakota Resource Council and Otter Tail Corporation's Advanced Determinant of Prudence application case number PU06481 and Montana Dakota Utility Company's Advanced Determination of Prudence application case number PU06482.
Second.
This is the same case that we were talking about earlier, where we just granted the trade secret, the ability to file trade secret information with the commission. In this particular action, what we're doing is granting intervention to Mark Treshock and the Dakota Resource Council so that they can participate fully in the case and the hearing.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 SW6, I move the commission open an investigation into the reliability of electric service provided by Northern States Power Company, DBA Xcel Energy, case number PU0766.
Second.
Today I am making the motion to open an investigation into the reliability of electric service provided by Northern States Power Company in North Dakota. Xcel has provided the commission with reliability statistics for its entire service area in North Dakota for the past 5 years as part of performance-based rate making. However, it is the goal of this investigation to look more closely at reliability in specific service areas such as Grand Forks, Fargo, and Minot. Starting an investigation does not imply any wrongdoing by Xcel. Opening an investigation gives the commission a way to track information that we request and receive on Xcel reliability. It also gives the public a chance to see this information and know the process that the commission is using for this investigation. However, it is not business as usual when an electric utility company has the failure of two electric transformers at one substation within a two-week period. NSP reports that on February 3rd, a transformer failed and 1,600 customers were without electric power for a period of time. NSP also reports that on February 14th, a transformer failure left 6,700 customers without power for a significant period of time. Both of these failures occurred in Grand Forks during extremely cold weather, which left people in a very dangerous situation. Xcel Energy has already been asked informally to provide the following information to the Commission. Reliability statistics for the past 3 years for the substations that serve Grand Forks, Minot, and Fargo. This includes duration and number of outages, the number of customers affected by each outage, and the cause of each outage. Also, maintenance records for the substations and major distribution components in all three cities. Xcel Energy has already provided some of this information, which has been docketed in case number 0766. If this motion passes, and I hope that it will, then I would see that the commission would work with staff member Jerry Lean on putting together additional data requests to Xcel Energy.
I certainly support looking into the outage that happened in Grand Forks. I do have a question, though, just procedurally, so I understand a little bit better what the motion is intended to encompass. Is this primarily directed at the Grand Forks outage, or is this just sort of general reliability issue? The reason I ask is I did look through the public contact system, and there hasn't been an overwhelming number of contacts that we've received on Xcel reliability generally, nor for any of the companies, really, Otter Tail or MDU, and I'm wondering if is this intended primarily for that situation? Or I know we had a concern in Fargo, a specific one related to a New Horizons Manor, actually, which is in my old legislative district. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to get the scope of it and maybe procedurally ask, maybe perhaps staff even, if in the past when we've had investigations, we've done investigations on reliability issues like the ice storm, which knocked out, was actually a lot more severe than what we encountered in Grand Forks a few years ago, or last a couple weeks ago, or those reliability glitches that Otter Tail was having in relationship to the WAPA lines, if you remember that.
Yes, I do remember that. Mm-hmm.
We've had investigations, but I don't recall having sort of motions to open investigations and things like that. And I'm just wondering procedurally how we sort of look at going at this going forward.
All right. The reason that there's a motion for an investigation in this case is it actually gives us a docket then to use. And I'm not sure if we had a docket in the case where we were doing a follow-up on the information we received regarding the ice storm. I could
sure.
be wrong.
Although
but
we open dockets all the time without motions.
Mm-hmm. But in this particular case, I'm making a motion to open this investigation. And then my intention is, and of course I'm looking forward to input from my fellow commissioners, is that we would look at reliability in specific service areas, Grand Forks, Fargo, and Minot, and we would be able to compare reliability between those areas and be able to look at the substation reliability in those cities as well as other factors. We receive, as I said in my opening statement here, we receive rather broad data from Xcel regarding their electric reliability in North Dakota. This would give us a chance to look in a more granular level at reliability statistics throughout their service area here in North Dakota.
Okay. Just trying to get my hands around how this is handled differently than perhaps other investigations, which sound fairly similar. But
mm-hmm. I guess I had similar questions. I appreciated, Susan, in your opening comments, that your clarification that this does not imply somehow that there was wrongdoing on the part of Xcel, because I do think sometimes certain words stimulate certain creative juices, if not in newsmakers and news writers from time to time. And so I think it's important, and I appreciate this clarification, that we're not doing anything so far out of the ordinary so as to, you know, appear dramatic.
No, that's correct. When people have said to me, when is an investigation open, I have said to them when it's needed.
Yeah, there you go. So anyway, I appreciate the clarification.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. And I would just point out, folks in the public understand, we have had quote-unquote investigations. I mean, there's no technical legal term for investigations in the past with regard to numerous reliability matters. We're just, I guess, procedurally handling this one a little bit differently.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, on SW6. Oops, that's the one we just took care of. So we're now on to SW7. I move the commission authorize procurement of construction services for the Williams County Road I move the commission authorize procurement of construction services for the Williams County Road 9, Phase 2, and Columbus, Phase 8 sites using competitive sealed bidding procedures.
Second.
In late 2006, the commission approved Williams County Road 9, Phase 2, and Columbus, Phase 8, abandoned mine land sites for reclamation in 2007. AML staff have prepared the necessary documents to solicit bids on these projects, and we plan to start advertising for these bids. So this is just a procedural step at this time to get this process started.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That concludes the items in my portfolio. Next, we'll go to Commissioner Clark.
I just have one item in my portfolio. It's item TC1. I move the commission adopt the order submitting rules to the Attorney General for an opinion as to the legality and whether they conflict with any other state rule or law. Case number PU05575.
Second.
This is the next step in the process, although an important step. It's really kind of the threshold determination of when we move forward with the rulemaking. With regard to a rulemaking that we've proposed dealing with what we call in the telephone industry ETCs, or eligible telecommunications carriers. These are carriers that receive federal universal service support. That's money to help telecommunications companies build out networks in high-cost areas, wireless companies and wireline companies. And it's although the federal government sets up the rules generally regarding how companies receive their money to build out their networks, the state commissions in most states, including North Dakota, actually grant the ETC status, which gives the company then the ticket to get the federal support. What we're doing by forwarding these rules is actually tightening up the ETC requirements in accordance with some changes that the Federal Communications Commission made about a year or two ago. The proposed changes, I think, will be ones that will be welcomed by North Dakota consumers. We do get questions from time to time, what are the obligations of eligible telecommunications carriers? And frankly, when it first started, the FCC was, there wasn't a lot of meat on the bones of exactly what was required. And so over time, they and then subsequently states have adopted some tightening up of these requirements, and I'm fully supportive of what we're doing here. I think most importantly for folks that may be interested in exactly what these entail, for example, an eligible telecommunications carrier, and oftentimes although the rules are written generically, where we get a lot of questions is with regard to wireless coverage and what are the requirements of a wireless carrier. What these rules propose is that when a carrier who's receiving ETC money gets it, they have to be able to provide service in one manner or another to the person who's requesting the service, and it doesn't necessarily have to be over the typical 0.3-watt phone that you may see sold in stores. There are a number of options that the FCC allows, and we're adopting those, such as there may be a way to modify a customer's premise-based equipment, an extra antenna or something like that, something that gives a little more power to the wireless device. But in the end, there's a requirement that within a reasonable amount of time, one way or another, every telecommunications provider has to get that service to the customer at their premises. They have to certify that they're eligible to that they're able to remain functional in emergency situations. They have to certify certain customer service standards. And in the case of wireless customers, what we're requiring here is that they can comply with this by adopting the CTIA Consumer Code of Wireless Service. That's basically a checklist of items that wireless carriers agree to adopt, things like they have customers have 14 days to try out their equipment, and if they find that it's not working, they have the opportunity to return it penalty-free and get out of the contract. It's things like that. Informally, wireless companies have adopted that, and I think most of the carriers in our state have adopted that. This actually formalizes it because for those carriers that are getting Universal Service Fund money, they'll be required to actually adopt that code, so it does put some more teeth into that. Probably the other really important thing that's coming out of this is all companies will be required to, in the future, submit detailed information about how they've received the federal money and how they plan on spending it, and probably most importantly, how they have spent it within the last year of the certification, so that as regulators, we can specifically know where they've been putting that money to upgrade facilities.
Eligible telecommunication carriers is a special designation that the commission makes. These folks receive high-cost fund dollars from the federal government to help them provide excellent service here in North Dakota to their North Dakota rural customers. This rulemaking is an effort for the commission to tighten up our requirements, to make them better, so that we can have a more accurate idea of how these dollars are being spent by these telecommunication carriers. And also, when they apply to be an ETC, we have more clear requirements of what they will need to do.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 And that ends the items in my portfolio.
All right. And that ends the formal items on our agenda this morning. Commissioner Clark, you said you had a few announcements to make.
Sure. And I'll, Kevin, whenever you have to drop off, feel free.
All right. Thanks.
The only thing I was going to bring up as far as a report from our D.C. meetings, I had the opportunity to meet with a number of FCC offices and commissioners while I was in D.C., and we had a series of great meetings within the telecom committee, but I did take some time to specifically address some issues that have come up here in North Dakota, especially with regard to wireless. As commissioners and folks who followed it recall, when we had our meeting in Flagstaff, there were a number of questions about border issues, where you have coverage along the Canadian border, and sometimes folks, when they're driving in that area, their cell phones will roam onto Canadian towers, even though they're still in the U.S., and then they get dinged with large roaming charges. The commission itself has had that happen on our own state phones and some of our inspectors who travel around the state. So that was an issue that I raised with the commission offices that I talked to. They're very interested in it. It's not something, frankly, that they've probably heard a lot about, I would guess, because there just aren't a lot of folks in the big scheme of things when you look at things nationally that live along that border. Maybe more densely populated north of Seattle and then probably the Detroit-Windsor area might be another where it's fairly populated. But as I understand it, there are actually agreements in the Detroit-Windsor area so that that doesn't happen. I'm hoping that perhaps something like that can be struck for citizens in more sparsely populated areas like the North Dakota border. The other issue that I brought up and have yet to get a great answer on is this whole analog-to-digital conversion and why it is in rural America that within a short period of time people are really effectively being kicked off their old analog 3-watt bag phones, which in many situations are the best choice for consumers that are traveling around and want to get wireless coverage. I'm raising the issue. They know it's out there, and my message to them is, you know, this is a serious concern for people in rural America, and to the extent that those phones start getting turned off, I think there's going to be a significant backlash. I'm hoping that some sort of accommodation can be made for areas where you just don't have the same sort of congestion issues on the radio spectrum as you do in urban areas.
Thanks, Tony. It's always good to go to those meetings. It does give us a wonderful chance to talk to people from all over the United States and to learn a lot about not only our regional approach to issues, but national approach to the same issues that we're addressing here in North Dakota. And with that, we do have an informal hearing this afternoon. And the topic of that, I don't have it right in front of me.
The 2-1.
Oh, yes, the 2-1-1. We have a 2-1-1 application, and that has to do with people can call 2-1-1 and dial that number, and we're going to be addressing the community of Fargo and how that 211 number will be used in the Fargo area and agencies that will be involved with that. When you call 211, you can reach social services that are available to people with all sorts of different needs. And so then there's an operator that tells you how you can connect with the right person, whether that you need daycare for your children, whether you need psychological counseling, whether you need have a mental health problem, whatever. They can help you find the right folks to go to. Okay, with that, are there any questions from anyone who's present? Okay, hearing none, then we'll close this portion of the meeting and we'll adjourn for 5 minutes to do our signing, and then we'll come back for our administrative portion of the meeting. Thank you.